Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today's first article that I would like to read for you is from the New York Times of November 21st. The title of this article is Holiday Hiring is Slow, Frustrating Job Seekers. The article was written for the New York Times by Kaylin Rohn. Taylor Gussman has been searching for a full-time job since graduating from St. Mary's College of California 2 years ago. With a bachelor's degree in communications and a marketing internship under her belt, she hoped that a seasonal job in her field this holiday season might help her to transition into full-time work, but she has applied to more than 30 positions already without hearing back from most. "It's honestly just very scary out there," says Ms. Gussman, who is 24 and lives in San Francisco. "I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not sure when I'll land it." Employers are signaling a more cautious approach to holiday hiring this year. Retailers that normally add staff for the Thanksgiving to Christmas rush, such as UPS, have not yet released their typical hiring targets. Others, such as Kroger, have said that they expected to hire to bring on fewer temporary workers than last year. Economic headwinds have made the companies more guarded. The longest ever government shutdown, tariff costs, and artificial intelligence tools that have been reshaping certain roles have made it much harder for many Americans to find work. Searches for holiday job are up 27% from last year, while seasoning postings are up 2.7%, according to a report from Indeed. "This is going to be a more competitive seasonal hiring season," said Corey Staddle, an economist at Indeed. The National Retail Federation expects retailers to hire between 265,000 and 365,000 seasonal workers this year, down from 442,000 in 2024. Challenger Gray & Christmas research firm reported that holiday staffing could slip to its lowest level in more than a decade. The cautious pace of announcements so far suggests that companies are not yet betting on a big seasonal surge, said Andy Challenger, senior vice president of Challenger Gray & Christmas. "This year may be more about doing more with less." In part, the tougher holiday hiring market reflects a shift that began after the pandemic, when retailers struggling to fill roles hired earlier and more steadily throughout the year. Many are trying to give more hours to current employees before they open positions to seasonal applicants, which reduces the number of short-term jobs available heading into November and December. Take Target. Last year, the retailer said that they would hire 100,000 seasonal workers. This year, it said it was offering additional hours to current employees and did not mention how many seasonal workers they plan to hire. Target also said that they would tap its on-demand team. A group of almost 43,000 store employees who pick up shifts rather based on their schedules. As it reported earnings on Wednesday, the company said they anticipated a weak holiday season as strapped customers pulled back on spending for apparel and home goods. Nearly 9 million Americans work more than one job these days, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. People turn to holiday positions for flexible hours and extra income when they need it most. Holiday sales from November 1st to December 24th are expected to grow 3.6% from last year, according to MasterCard's Spending Pulse forecast. Alexandra Mariscal Lazo, a 20-year-old student at California Lutheran University, began looking for a second job to help cover rent and monthly expenses in June. Her part-time job as a server at a restaurant chain was not proving enough shifts, she said, and she noticed several openings for seasonal jobs in the same sector that offered slightly higher pay than her wage of around $17 an hour. Because she was already employed, she expected to find something fairly quickly, but she is still searching. "I need that second job," Ms. Mariska Lazo said. "I will be lying if I say that I didn't go on Indeed every day to look at what has opened." Ms. Guzman, that college graduate in San Francisco, picked up a part-time job as a sales associate earlier this year to help cover her bills and higher expenses. But she landed the role only because of a friend's referral, she said. And now, as the year comes to a close, she worries that she may not land her first full-time job in this current market. "It's honestly very disheartening," Ms. Guzman said. "I just don't see the light at the end of the tunnel." The next article that I would like to read for you today is also from the New York Times, the 21st of November. The article's title is "Job Gains Disguise Weakness Outside Services." The full effects of Trump's trade and immigration policies are yet to come. This article was written for The Times by Lydia DePillis. Employers notched a respectable month of hiring in September, ending a slow summer of a positive note and assuaging some concern that the labor market had tipped into a contraction. But the data were not unequivocally positive. The unemployment rate edged up to 4.4%, suggesting that more people were looking for work and not finding it. Delayed by 6 weeks because of the government shutdown, the report is an already out-of-date picture of a labor market that had been sputtering in the face of federal layoffs and erratic tariff policies. The Labor Department is set to release numbers for October and November next month after the Federal Reserve next meets to consider whether or not to cut interest rates. The mixed signals sent by the September report, which is also out of step with some private sector indicators, may only muddy the waters further. "We're going into the next meeting without a clear sign about the direction of the labor market," said Michael Reed, a U.S. economist at RBC Capital Markets. "There's been a lot of fog out there. This report is not helping that situation at all." The economy added 119,000 jobs in September, more than double what forecasters had expected and well above the 71,000 job average for the rest of 2025. Numbers for the previous 2 months were revised down slightly, erasing 33,000 job gains from July and August, which made September look more like an acceleration. However, the strength was not widely distributed. As has been the case for the past 2 years now, job growth was largely supplied by the healthcare industry, which added 43,000 jobs. Bars and restaurants added 37,000 jobs, an indication of robust spending on hospitality services. Both of those sectors are tied to an economy that is aging and lately powered by higher income consumers who have been spending freely on discretionary services, while those on the lower end of the income spectrum struggle to keep up with their bills. The side of the economy tied to goods was much weaker. Transportation and warehousing shed 25,000 jobs, potentially reflecting a drop in imports that started over the summer as tariffs kicked in. Manufacturing has been drifting downward since early 2023, trimmed 6,000 jobs. Surveys of manufacturing companies signal a continued decline. Temporary help services subtracted 16,000 jobs. That sector now is as small as it has been since 2012. And as President Trump's cost-cutting measures have continued, the federal government has shed 97,000 jobs since January. The reading for October is expected to be very low or negative, reflecting another 100,000 federal workers who came off of federal payrolls at the end of September. Although layoffs have remained fairly low overall, high-profile announcements from companies such as UPS and Amazon in recent weeks may be a sign that is changing. Job openings, as measured by the job search website Indeed, have reached their lowest level in 4 years. Having 90% of your jobs come from only two industries is a concerning problem. We need a variety of different jobs to make an economy run, said Corey Stahl, who is an economist with Indeed. It's easy to say, hey, look, the economy is solid, but that cannot ring true for the type of workers who have been laid off in the last month or so. The rise in unemployment came both from layoffs and from people who started to look for jobs and had not yet succeeded. The share of people either working or looking for a job for work ticked up largely because of women in their prime working years who neared the record high for labor force participation that they set last year. But this job market has been different for people early in their careers, since employers have had more candidates to choose from. The unemployment rate for workers between age 20 and 24 is 9.2%, the highest it has been since 2015. Across all age groups, the number of people working part-time who would rather work full-time has been drifting up. That is the reality Sierra Gacoma, who is confronting. Upon graduating from Temple University in 2022, she landed an internship and a fellowship, but never the stable, permanent job in social justice and human rights advocacy that she was hoping for. After her last position ended, Mrs. Gacoma went back to work for a master's degree in communications. On the side, she's working a few shifts a week as a barista in Philadelphia while she looks for a position with more hours and higher pay. I'm in a weird limbo position that I feel a lot of people in my age have been in, she says. She's 25 years of age. You're stuck where you have the experience and you are trainable, but you don't have enough experience and entry-level jobs don't really exist anymore. Despite the increase in unemployment, wages continued to rise at a healthy rate, increasing 3.8% over a year earlier. This measure, too, is unequally distributed. Workers on the lower end of the income spectrum have been seeing slower pay increases than people who earn more. Average hourly earnings have been growing faster than inflation since May of 2023, but as wage gains slow, the gap is narrowing. One big factor lurking under the surface of the jobs data is the Trump administration's aggressive immigration enforcement, with virtually nobody crossing U.S. borders without a visa. Employment in some sectors with a high density of unauthorized immigrants, such as residential building construction and child care, has dropped this year. Now, White House policies are also starting to affect legal immigration channels, such as the H-1B visas for skilled workers, which now carries a $100,000 fee. Nancy Clark runs a small advertising firm in New Hampshire. She's planning to bring on another graphic designer after the new year, provided that she gets more certainty from her clients. This time, she said she will hire domestically, even though she has found top-notch talent in other countries before. It's now much more costly to both recruit and retain them. I just cannot afford the concern and expense to hire another designer on an H-1B visa, whether or not they are the right person, Ms. Clark said. The largest effects of the immigration crackdown may still be to come. The foreign-born labor force has been falling since March, according to Labor Department surveys, and yet there are still nearly 4 million more immigrant workers in the United States than there were at the start of the pandemic back in 2020. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the New York Times on the 2nd of November. What Women Really Want: Work Boundaries. This article was written for the New York Times by Karina Lowe, who is an economist at the University of Pennsylvania. Before I became an economist studying gender, I was a junior consultant. I spent late hours working far from home, skipping meals, and making it back to our hotels late in the night, only to be woken by urgent emails a few hours later. After a year of exhaustion and regular illness, I got assigned to a new team and started introducing myself differently. My name is Kareen, and I eat 3 meals a day and sleep 8 hours a night. I have been thinking of those early consulting days as progress closing the gender wage gap has essentially stalled out and mothers are leaving the labor force in droves. The data tells me that women, and especially mothers, do not necessarily need remote work. We don't need so-called flexible work schedules. What we do need are plain old boundaries, jobs where work stops at a set time and allows other parts of our lives to exist without interruption. A 2017 paper by two economists, Alexandra Moss and Amanda Pallas, showed that working mothers with children under age 4 would be willing to give up barely any pay for a flexible schedule and would give up an average of just 15% of their pay to work from home. But they would forego almost 40% of their income to avoid an employer discretion job in which their boss sets their hours at will. The problem may be more pronounced among mothers, but it is not unique to them. All workers in the study, men and women, parents and non-parents alike, disliked employer discretion jobs and were willing to take hefty pay cuts in order to avoid them. Yet those jobs are a significant part of our economy. At the high end of the income range, a shift toward interactive, team-based work has created something economists call convex returns to hours. Companies earn more when one worker works 80 hours a week than when two work 40 hours each because that one worker's knowledge and relationships are crucial. Two relatively junior employees might be interchangeable, but two law partners or consulting managers are not. Creating incentives for firms to eke out more hours from each employee. It's a pattern the economist Claudia Golden calls greedy work in lower-income jobs. It manifests in on-demand scheduling, which allows companies to send workers hours at will, sending them home from scheduled shifts, calling them in abruptly, or shifting schedules at short notice. These demands are especially costly to women who still carry the majority of home and child care responsibilities despite their entry into the labor market. In my research, I have seen that men spend about the same amount of time cooking and cleaning as they did back in the 1970s. That does not change even if the female partner is the primary breadwinner. She'll still do about twice as much housework. Then there is child care. While the time that fathers spend caring for their children has increased, the time the mothers spend has increased even more. Mothers today spend twice as much time with their kids as their own mothers did, leaving the gender gap in child care even bigger, not smaller. Parents, particularly in highly educated families, focus more on their children in the hope of securing them a better future. That creates even greater strains on the schedules. Amid all of this, I see companies throwing up their hands. It's too hard to retain women, they seem to say. Almost two-thirds of corporate leaders who mandated return to office policies after the pandemic saw disproportionately higher numbers of women leave their companies, a survey by one industry group found. But women's choices don't back up the idea that in-office work is entirely to blame. Nursing, which can essentially be done only at the site of care, remains almost 90% female. Most medical students are now women, too, as are about 70% of physician associates and almost 90% of nurse practitioners. Both of those occupations are growing quickly. In fact, in the past 2 years, nearly 40% of all new jobs have gone to the women working in healthcare. If women are not inherently averse to in-office work, then what is the issue? That's where I point back to boundaries. Nursing shifts are typically rigid, often set far in advance. While hours on a given shift can be grueling, they are also a known quantity. Even on-call time, common in the medical field, is predictable. Your phone might ring on a Saturday night, but only if it's your assigned time to be on call. The effect is that people can set plans with child care providers, partners, friends, and family members. They can build a life outside of work, knowing that they won't be interrupted on a moment's notice. It's not a matter of working remotely, during which personal life and work life can seep into each other, nor of simple flexibility. It's about a clear delineation between work and every other aspect of life. Other industries could learn from healthcare. While the industry's rigid scheduling is largely a product of necessity, hospitals must, after all, be staffed consistently. The benefits of firm scheduling policies are not limited to one field. Hours set in advance with few workplace responsibilities outside of those times are a boon to anyone seeking boundaries between work and life, particularly for women. Boundaries save money, too. Child care costs are already high enough without needing last-minute or aftercare. They also allow the investments in children that parents value, or for those without kids, all too scarce leisure time. Companies craving in-office team culture could structure shifts predictably with hard stops at a set time, ideally around the close of school or daycare. Workers could choose to log back in remotely after dinner and children's bedtimes, and calls could be scheduled at those less costly times. Perhaps most radically, they could consider assigned on-call shifts. Workers could rotate among themselves, being on hand to solve issues after hours at scheduled times, while having plenty of time to go do not disturb from work needs at other times. If this sounds pretty far-fetched, I am encouraged by one healthcare subfield once thought to be a no-go for women, obstetric medicine. Because obstetricians were required to be on call at all hours to deliver their patients' babies, it once was believed that the mothers who had to care for their own children simply couldn't do the job. In 1970, though, only 7% of the OBs were women. But as those initial female doctors entered the job market, many patients preferred them. This gave those doctors a small amount of market power. They used it to organize into group practices where multiple doctors would see a single patient, and whoever was on call when that patient went into labor would deliver that baby. Today, over 60% of OBs are female. Your move, consulting. And the next article I'd like to read for you is from the Wall Street Journal, the 24th of November. The title, Two Sisters, How Artificial Intelligence Affects Their Different Career Paths. This article was written for the journal by Julie Jargon. One sister earns a decent living fixing cars while the other struggles as a writer. The Tally sisters are in the early stages of building their careers. One sister feels her path is AI proof, the other, not so much. Sophia Tally, 22 years old, decided during her freshman year of high school that she wanted to write long-form, magazine-style, nonfiction pieces. The world was a different place then. It would be some 5 years before generative AI would be out in the wild, stringing together words as well as many humans. Now shaky jobs prospects have her worried and in financial limbo. Hannah Tally, 25, dropped out of college 4 years ago to become an auto mechanic. She feels stable with a steady paycheck. An uncertain job market for young adults, spurred in part by the increasing sophistication and use of artificial intelligence in the workplace, is having broad ripple effects. Some workers are migrating to skilled trades. White-collar employees are under pressure to level up their artificial intelligence skills, and parents are trying to figure out how to guide their college-age kids. Career counselors are advising young adults these days to sharpen their people skills, develop AI expertise, and to be ready to pivot. The Texas sisters' divergent career paths reflect the shifting dynamics. White-collar jobs that once seemed solid are no longer so, and some skilled blue-collar work is looking like a safer bet. The difference in their career situations is made stark by a recent Microsoft research paper that analyzed the role of artificial intelligence in the workplace. The analysis found that while 85% of writers' and authors' work overlaps with tasks already performed frequently by AI, only 19% of auto mechanics' tasks were ones that bots commonly do now. Because we're coming close to the end of the time that we have allotted for our program on careers for today, I'd like to end this article here and continue it next time when we discuss the effect of the different career paths of artificial intelligence. This is the end of the program today, and thank you for listening in. I hope that you'll all enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for listening in. I'm a volunteer reader, Irene Lubin, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.